across the UK, across continental North America, and around the world on the internet by webcast and by podcast. My name is Howard Hughes, and this is The Unexplained. As I record these words, we have a very nice sunny spring-like day. Makes a big change from the long, cold, miserable winter that we've been through in the United Kingdom. And it's just, it lifts your spirits. You know, I've been working alone in my apartment for, as I bored you before telling you this story, for the last year. So just to see the outside world and a clear blue sky, no jets going to Heathrow Airport because, you know, there's very restricted air travel at the moment. But beautiful clear air, lovely green grass, it's just a tonic for your heart. Thank you very much for all of your emails recently. If you want to contact me, give me feedback on the shows, guest suggestions, whatever you want to do, go to my website, theunexplained.tv, designed and created by Adam Cornwell. Thank you, Adam. Hayley books the guests for this, including the one that you're about to hear. But thank you very much for all of your emails and all of your reflections on my 15 years of the podcast and 5 years on the radio show. Always get in touch with me. When you get in touch, tell me who you are, where you are, and how you use this show. The guest on this edition, somebody very different, Carla Wills Brandon. I know that she's been on the big American shows like Coast to Coast AM. She and I have never spoken before. But one of the things that she does, she is a psychologist and a medium, a lot of other things, and has written, you know, a stack of books about all kinds of things. One of the things she's done, which is what I wanted to talk about here, is research into that state between this life and the next one, if you believe that there is. And that research is in a book. I'm just actually leafing through some notes here. One Last Hug Before I Go is the book. This is something that is not researched that much, and I think is a fascinating subject. So you will find that Carla Wills Brandon in Texas is a very different guest. But I hope you will bear with both of us and listen to a conversation about many different things that I think you'll find of interest. If you want to get in touch with me, like I say, go to the website, theunexplained.tv. Go to the Facebook page, the official Facebook page of The Unexplained with Howard Hughes. Always good to hear from you. And thank you for all of your support through my dark times of the last few months. And I know that, you know, my feelings will be echoed by a lot of you out there. Thank you so much. Okay, let's get to Texas. Carla Wills Brandon is on The Unexplained. Carla, thank you for coming on my show.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you for inviting me.
How would you describe yourself, Carla Wills Brandon?
Oh, kind of like an old hippie. You know, who can't give up the beads and can't give up the patchouli oil. And, you know, somebody who's, I like to think I'm a free thinker. Mm-hmm. Because I don't fit in any category, one category, a little bit more and maybe in this category or that category, but I'm not really like a straight-laced sort of person. So if you were to come to my house, I would be making grape leaves. It's an Armenian dish where you roll in these grape leaves off the vine, rice and all kinds of spices. I'd serve that to you with some homemade pilaf.
Wow, can I come now?
Yeah, get on over here. I'll make you some.
Now, I'm just going to say this to my listener. Whenever I ask a question or speak to you, my voice is coming through your loudspeaker on your computer. I'm going to try and mute you whenever I speak, but that's how we're going to have to do it just because of that. I don't think it's going to be too much of a problem, and you sound fine. You said to me, Carla, that you were part of part of the hippie generation. What did that mean for you?
For me, it meant we had ideas that were very radical. Some of us got very involved in those causes, but also it involved a lot of other things that we did. Music was very big back then. It's big here now, but back then it was really, really something. And we all kind of clung together. And it was sort of like a second growing up, which I really enjoyed it, to be honest with you. Even snow skiing, because I liked snow ski a lot. Not so much now, but back then I really did. I was a demon on the hills. I could come racing down with all my buddies, and we'd all have our beads on, and we look so cool in our overalls.
So, you know, I mean, that sounds idyllic to me. And, you know, to many people, that was an ideal kind of generation. But to some people, they might say, well, you tuned in and dropped out and never dropped back in again.
Well, some of us did drop back in again. I had to, you know, I just got to a point where I had to sort of clean up my act. I got married, and then I was pregnant with my first son. And something hit me on the head. It was like a moment of enlightenment, which said, you need to grow up, girl. You can't just be a baby like that anymore. You need to move on.
Yeah, no, I think that probably hits most of us, you know. I'm still trying to grow up as much as I should. But there comes a moment of realization when you realize, you know, you're not 17 anymore.
I know. Isn't it sad?
Sad, it's tragic.
Some of it I would like to repeat. I really would. I'd have a good time. But there are other parts of me, when I stopped all that nonsense, I was about 27 years old of age. And when I dropped all that stuff, all of a sudden, the enlightenment, the ability to feel outside myself intensified. And it was like, that's a whole new chapter.
And but hold on, don't they say that, you know, those who were, indulging in the hippie lifestyle were more connected with spirituality and all of that kind of stuff beyond ourselves? I think what you've just said is when you stopped doing it, that's when you connected. Is that right?
I was blotto, blotto, blotto before.
Oh, God.
I had some experiences during that time. But I was definitely a dark, deep hole. And so when I got my act together, all of a sudden, you know, the sun was brighter. I could see the veins in my hands. It was like a real awakening.
I mean, I'm trying to find a way of putting this that's nice. I mean, are you telling me that for a certain amount of that period, you were off your head on psychedelics?
Not psychedelics, but every other thing I could get into my body.
Okay, right.
I was a trash can.
All right, well, and then you decided it's time to grow up, which is a realization that, you know, all of us have to face at some point. So talk to me about where, you know, the journey to where you're at now, and where are you at now? What would you describe yourself as being?
Well, I live on a small island. Off the Gulf Coast of Texas, and it's very eccentric here, you know, so hippie chick moves to small eccentric island, and people are very like-minded around here, and so it helped me relax, to be honest with you, because before that, I was living in Houston, and that's a rat race. You know, but I hadn't had many experiences up to that point. Now, when I shut down all of the mood-altering chemicals, then I began having experiences. But I had to get really, really clear. Now, this is just for me. Other people, it may be different, but this is just for me. I had to get out of the fog because I was missing so much. I was missing so much in my spiritual life, in my mediumship, in my professional life as a marriage and family therapist. I mean, life, relatives all around me. I always thought the sky was gray. That's the way it was. And so it started like that when my mother passed away. My mother was also like a radical women's lib sort of person where everybody was burning their bras and it was very wild back then. And so she was a free thinker too. And I found out after she passed Should all these books and pamphlets and everything about paranormal stuff? And I thought, oh my, my. So I put that away. Right before she passed, I had a visitation from her. I was at a Sly and the Family Stone concert, of course.
Wow.
Yeah, and Sly was late, and somebody was passing around a Coke, and so I took a swig of it, and all of a sudden I felt, ugh, what is this? I don't feel very good. So I saw an ambulance in the distance, and so I got my skinny self up and walked over there and asked if I could go into the ambulance and lay down. And these guys said, sure, no problem. When I woke up, most of the people were gone. Sly had shown up. He had had, you know, he had done what he was supposed to do. But then I went home and I discovered that at the same time I climbed into an ambulance, my mother was being put in an ambulance. And so I knew something was up, that her time was not long. Right before she passed, I had some other experiences which kind of caught me off guard. But I could hear her calling me with my sensory ears, my sensitive ears.
So hold on. Were you, I mean, look, it's always traumatic, isn't it? I've been through the experience of losing parents, both of them, my mother first. Nothing on this earth prepares you for that. Are you saying that your mother tried to communicate with you or some part of her before she passed?
I think so. I mean, I was 16 when she passed, and no, be quiet. My witch cat got in here. You might hear a few, you might hear some meowing.
That's all right. Don't mind the odd stray meow. That's fine.
Okay. When she did pass, she came to me, and it was an awesome experience. It's not something I was going to forget real soon. But she came to me and presented me with a knowing, some sort of knowing that she had crossed over and that she was fine, and to not worry about her, and that she would always be with me. And I woke up and I thought, wow, ooh, what the heck was that? Well, that's actually called an after-death communication. And so that was my first big experience with this stuff.
How did you know that was an after-death communication and not the drugs talking?
Because I was off the drugs.
Right. So you can be absolutely clear about that. So, you know, in a way, you needed to clean yourself up to open yourself up.
Oh, definitely. This girl needed to wash and dry, I'm telling you.
So what did your mother tell you?
She told me that she was going now, and that's where the title One Last Hug comes from on one of my books, and that she was all right, and that I didn't need to worry about her, and that she'd always be with me. And when somebody has an experience like that, they never forget it. They don't forget it. It imprints on the soul. And so I can remember it as clear as day. Now, after she passed, she came to me in a dream, and this is another after-death communication. She came to me in a dream. There was this beautiful, beautiful mountain covered in flowers and all different colors, and it was just so peaceful. And I was walking up the mountain, and then on the other side, I saw my mother walking up the mountain. And at the very top, there was a bench. And so we went up there and we sat and we talked. And the first thing we talked about were all of the beautiful flowers that were there. The colors were so pretty. And then we started talking about unfinished business. I got some kudos, pats on the back for cleaning myself up. And she said, I will be there for you. Years, 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 years later, I went to Arthur Findlay for a workshop. Arthur Findlay is a famous institution for mediumship.
Yeah, no, I spoke very recently with Nicole de Haas, who I think also works at that institution.
Okay, okay. That's fun.
So what happened when you went?
Oh, well, when I went, it's like I got opened up more. The first thing is my mentor asked me to do a platform reading, which means I'm in front of an audience and I pick, you know, somebody, there's like this pull. And so I felt pulled to this particular person and I started reading them, giving them information about themselves. And she said, yes, 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 yes. And then after the fact, I found out that she was actually one of the most famous mediums in England. I mean, and I was floored with that I was able to do that.
And who was that? I can think of a few names, but can you remember that person's name?
No, I can't. Mm-hmm. I can't. But what was so interesting is a year or so later, her daughter did a reading on me. She was doing a platform reading. And so she talked about my mom and she talked about how she's here and that she gave me information about what she wanted to say. And I just burst into tears. I was blown away by that. I really was. And so with those experiences, I'd always been interested in UFOs. My grandfather and I used to sit in the backyard, like in the 40s in California, they had sightings of UFOs. Mm-hmm. And so he was convinced they were there. So we would sit outside, he would smoke his pipe, and we'd spend the whole night looking up at the stars, waiting for someone to come. But my family was, on my mother's side, was pretty, they were pretty open about this. On my father's side, they were they had escaped Russia, and they were, you know, they were just trying to be Americans back then. I tried to bring some of it up with my grandfather. Now, when he passed, I was with my great aunt. Yes, okay, and all of a sudden, she heard him call her name, and she heard she said things like to his sister, like, I'm here, but can you come here and be with me? Which was a twist that I had never experienced before.
What, like an invitation to cross?
Yes, yes. And she was very, very sick. And then she said something else. She had a premonition. She said, you know, your grandfather has passed. Somebody needs to go out there and make sure that there was a grave dug. What? So my girlfriend and I, we took our flashlights and we went out to the cemetery, and lo and behold, no grave had been dug. And so I thought that was wild. It's like she had these visions and premonitions at the end of her life, and they were right on target. So
I just have to ask about that, though. The grave not being dug, was that because the graveyard had, failed in some way in its responsibility to make sure that when somebody passes, they have to prepare a grave in good time? What happened?
I have no idea. I just went out there and there wasn't a grave.
Pretty unusual, I would say. Okay.
I'd say so. So he would call her, mm-hmm. My grandfather would communicate with my great aunt, and then my great aunt would relay these premonitions and visions and things that she had experienced to me. But when she said, you need to go out to the graveyard and you need to see if there's a grave dug, and my friend Janilla and I, we got our flashlights and went tripping along the stones, and we saw that there was a grave had not been dug. And we went back and I told this to my great aunt, and she said, you know, I thought so. Thank you. So she received the message that she needed to receive. So it's in both sides of my family, but I think more so on my mother's side, because I think my mother was mediumistic and she had some psychic ability. And then there was my grandfather, and he loved all this stuff. He didn't talk about it much, but he did. He really did. And so he was somebody who today he is my conduit to the other side often. So he'll often come and help me if I'm doing a reading, which really is a good thing. It's like an awesome connection. And I'm the receiver in that situation, and he's the conduit. He's the go-between. He does not have opinions. He doesn't try to sway me. So it's a long line on my grandfather's side.
Does he tell you where he is and what it's like?
No, he's basically trying to boss me around when he shows up, you know. I just, you know, sometimes he did tell me what to do. But most of the time he just relayed information. But
that story about your great aunt is central, isn't it, to the research that you did on deathbed visions? Because not a huge amount of research has been done on these things. This is that in-between state, isn't it, when people are here but preparing to, if you believe in these things, go to the next place.
Yes, and they can come in different forms. They can come in ascent. They can come in, all of a sudden I will be making Russian food for no reason, and I'll feel my grandmother there. Sometimes the individual on the other side will actually manifest during an after-death communication. And right there, there they are. when I was really, really sick, I was in the hospital, and I had several after-death communications, and one of them involved all my family coming and surrounding my bed and telling me I was going to be okay. And I thought that was wild, but I felt so relieved.
Let's get it clear. You were in the hospital, clearly very sick, because are you saying that you were having those sort of near-death communications, but they were coming to tell you that although you were in a bad way, you were not going to go?
Yeah. So that makes it an after-death. Oh, yeah. Okay. It makes it an after-death communication.
I was just interested in, you know, in the fact that clearly, whatever portal opens up at that time had opened up for your great aunt, for example, but, you know, many other people through history, as you discuss in your book, you know, that portal was opening for you even though you were going to make it.
Yes, I think so. And I have seen the other side visually with my eyes.
Really?
And it's kind of like the Robin Williams movie where the colors are really, really bright and...
Are you talking about What Dreams May Come?
Yeah, there you go.
I love that film.
I do too. But it was like that. And I felt very, very relieved. After that, I actually did a reading when I was in the hospital. And I couldn't believe that I was so open to doing this reading, and that the person who I read for was actually very, very... You know, she was not upset. She started crying. So one of the things that I've learned is that it doesn't matter what kind of mood I'm in or how I'm feeling. If spirit is going to show up, they're going to show up. And they're going to show up in a manner which is something I can handle. And over the years, it's gotten better and better and better. So, now it's, you know, I can feel it, spot it, and sense it with no problem.
You don't have to tell me, and if it's uncomfortable, please don't. Why were you in the hospital? What was wrong with you?
Oh, I had, you really want to hear this? I had double knee replacement with septicemia.
Oh, Lord.
Yes, and I had 8 surgeries on one leg, and I think just 2 on the other leg. And then I had cancer, so we had to take care of that. And then I had a hip replacement. So, yeah, it was all kind of...
God, when was this, Carly? You really went through it.
Yeah, I think the last surgery was a year ago, August. And so I'm in the recovery stage still. But the thing that's so interesting is that when these things come, like I said, they come and it's like they're right there, you know, they're right there and they talk to me. And there's a connection and it's incredibly strong. And after the fact, I have this feeling of it's not even a portal, that it's more of a boom, I'm there. When that happens. And so when I read this woman out of the blue, of course, I had to immediately call my mentor and ask, what the hell is this? You know, I'm laying here sick as a dog. And he said to me, sometimes this stuff pops up when you're sick, when you're well. It pops up when you're having a bad day, a good day. You can't control spirit. And I went, oh, okay. So I have seen pieces of the afterlife, but oftentimes it's more evidence that they give me. So they will show me the house that they used to live in. One time I had an experience, we have a big causeway bridge that leads to the island. And I was coming home from a really rough, day with clients. And I started feeling this elation, and I started feeling like I was, I just felt something that was going on. And all of a sudden I had this vision of the interconnectedness with all of us, every rock, every animal, every plant. And then it went outward. And then I was in the stars and I was connected to all the stars. And then it went, it was just beautiful. It was beautiful. And when it ended, I was in tears. I was just in tears because it made so much sense. We are all connected.
Is this what made you want to research for the book about, what's the title of it? I'm just looking at it here. One Last Hug Before I Go. Was that the spark that made you want to research these experiences that other people as well as yourself had had?
Well, I really started after my mother passed away, but I was too young and dumb to know what I was doing. So I really got into it when I was 28. I started searching out people who could teach me how to do different things, and that was a very interesting journey. Some are good and some are bad, and it showed me who I didn't want to be. So that was a really good experience. But yeah, I started out fairly young. And then when I was younger, I had what was called a Kundalini experience. A Kundalini experience is more about chakras and its energy work. But in meditation, I had been practicing breathing. And all of a sudden, I felt all of this energy rush from my hip area all the way up to my crown, all the way up to the top of my head. And then there was this, it felt like a crash or a crack or something happened. After that, for about 3 days, I was, the energy bunny. And at that time, I didn't know what to do with that. I had no idea. I went looking for it. I couldn't find it. There was no internet back then. And so after that, I feel like my senses became stronger because I'm a clairvoyant. Sometimes I can hear too, to the other side.
Now, this, I'm sorry to jump in here, but I read just at the beginning of this, the introduction that you wouldn't have heard, where I read some of your biography, and it talks a lot about the psychological things that you do and your practice helping people, marital therapy and all of that stuff. Doesn't that psychology conflict with all of this other stuff that you do?
No, because it's very different. Now, according to the state of Texas, mediums can, there are certain things mediums can do and not do. According to the state of Texas, with my licenses, there are things I can do and I can't do. And so that really complicated the cornflakes. But I will tell you, sometimes I'll be sitting with a client and all of a sudden somebody will show up and it's a relative or it's a friend of the person I'm working with. Now, I can't tell them what they're saying. I can't tell them what the relative is saying. But what I can do is I can listen to the relative and ask for help and ask, what would you like to say to your offspring or your relative or your friend? And so they will relay to me what they want to be said, but then I have to turn it into a clinical thing. It has to be more clinical. I can't just read.
Jeez, that leaves you conflicted, I would think. I mean, what happens if somebody from the other side turns up when you're doing your day job and says, can you tell Patricia sitting there that she's been looking for my $200,000 legacy? It's under the floorboards in the kitchen. What do you do about that?
Well, I can't relay that to her, all of it. But what I can do is I can propose things like, what does your family think about religion and spirituality, and how are you raised? And so it's a very slow process clinically if I use that information. So I just can't lay it on her. It has to be in the context of a psychological view.
It just seems that there's a conflict between those two things there. I'm surprised that you're able to balance them.
Oh, yes, I can. It took a long time, too, let me tell you. The medium mystic stuff, it does. Anytime anybody has a spiritual experience like that, what happens is it's the one thing they never forget. It stays with them for the rest of their lives, for most people. It makes an imprint on the soul, as I like to say. So when I can sense when I need to be just clinical. And there are many, many times when I have to just be clinical. And I don't, no relatives show up, no experience, I can sense what's going on, which is part of my job. There's a big difference between knowing that there's somebody there for this person who wants to say something.
So would you call yourself, I always like to be able to find some kind of, handle to apply to somebody. Do you call yourself psychologist stroke medium or medium stroke psychologist or neither of those?
No, I don't call. I'm just I'm here. As a psychologist, and I've talked to other people who have had the same experience in my field, where most people who go into this field to begin with are usually very, very open. And most of them are free thinkers. Not all of them. They miss it. It just flies over their head. And then they come to me and I have to untangle the yarn of all different colors. But I don't know. I think I'm more mediumistic than I. Well, I let's just say 50-50.
All right, I'll settle for that. I just want to explain to my listener again that just occasionally when I ask a question, you will hear my voice come out of the loudspeaker in the device that Carla is using. And I'm trying to mute Carla whenever I speak, just to make that okay, because I don't want to stop the flow of the conversation. Got to get on to the book then. The book is called One Last Hug Before I Go. The biography details here say it's the first book to explore in depth the deathbed vision, DBV. There certainly isn't, from what I've seen, much in the way of research about this. Can you share some stories from the book without giving it all away?
Yeah, I can share some stories. There was this guy who got in touch with me, and he shared that he had had some sort of experience where he himself was by a river, and at the other side of the river were all his relatives waiting for him. And he knew at that time that he was going to be leaving the physical plane. And I talked to him several times, and then he passed away. But he was a very interesting character. Animals, a lot of people who are big animal people, they will see or experience their pets who have passed away. Like my mother-in-law, she had an experience with her her dog. I mean, my father-in-law had to take the dog to the vet to get a checkup. Nothing was wrong with the dog. And when they started investigating, they found out that the dog was full of cancer. And so all of a sudden, my mother-in-law had this, felt this brush of hair go across her legs, and she thought it was the dog. And so she leaned down to pet the dog, and the dog wasn't there. And then she looked up at the clock and, you know, noted what time it was. When my father-in-law came home, he did not bring the dog, and he told her the dog had passed. And she said, "What time was this?" And he relayed to her the time that she saw on the clock. And so for him and her, it was a very nurturing feeling. I won't go into detail about it, but it was very healing. So these things can be incredibly healing. When somebody has an experience like this, a lot of people who are death phobic, they fear death like nobody's business, and they're adults. I get kids who come in who are death phobic, and they usually have parents who are death phobic. And so it can be an intergenerational thing.
Aren't we all somewhat death phobic, though? I mean, who wants to die?
Well, I'm okay with that. I just need to be here for my sons and my husband. But
then you went through an experience, and you obviously health-wise you've really been through it. I'm glad that you're coming out of it now. You've had the light of experience. You've had those things happen to you. Most of us don't, and so we think of the idea of dying, you know, and it's scary.
Well, actually, what happens is that when somebody is preparing to die, a friend of mine in Ireland did a study on this. She replicated the research of two guys in Iceland who were psychologists, one of whom has passed away.
Was that Erlendur Haraldsson?
Yes, he was a good friend of mine. I loved him.
Yeah, wonderful, wonderful man. I was very shocked. I think it was earlier this year, I think, or late last year, to hear that Erlendur, who I had on this show, had died. Wonderful man, as you say. Sorry, I interrupted you.
Nervous attack, and 114 years old.
Wow.
Yeah, sharpest attack.
Very much so.
He was a very interesting character. But he and this other guy, Dr. Osis, I always say his name wrong, the two of them did a really in-depth study on deathbed visions. And they found out, when research like that is done, serious, and there are rules for that. And so they followed those rules. They went to the hospitals and they passed out, not to the patients, but their caregivers, you know, like the nurses or a doctor. And they asked them to just note how the individual was behaving up till the point of passing on. And they often talked about how a death phobic, difficult person would all of a sudden be kind and nice. And want to see his, maybe one.
I think the cat's back, isn't he? She.
He is. he's my witch cat. But they did this huge study, and that's where I got my initial information. I was in London. There were bombings in the tube, and that was kind of scary in itself. I got out of the tube and I walked down the street, which was probably a really dumb thing to do.
When was this?
This was probably 1998, 90, end in the 90s, not the beginning of the...
I was on radio in London then. We had a pretty scary time of it one way and another. Late 1990s was a bit unstable in London town, so you were here for that.
Yes, and so I walked into this old bookstore. I walked in there and I started perusing. I love old books. I just love them. I love the smell. I love the tattered look. I love the whole thing. All of a sudden, this green book kind of almost fell in my hands. And I looked at it, and it was a book by Dr. Barrett, who was a physicist and a big-time skeptic. His wife was a surgical pediatric doctor. And she started to notice that when women were miscarrying or passing from childbirth, that they had these wonderful experiences. And so when I read that, gosh, all of a sudden, all the pieces fit. They really fit well. And so that was the match that lit the fire.
Okay, so you went on to do this research that led to the book. I think my listeners love to hear stories. So do you have one, maybe two stories that are particularly impactful about that period where people, maybe they're death phobic and they're close to the point of passing and they change, but just the experience of that time, because as we both said, there isn't a whole ton of research about that.
Yes. There was a time when my cousin's father was passing away, and previous to his experience, most of the relatives that came over during that time, a lot of them, that, you know, religion wasn't allowed. And so they weren't religious. They were very secular. And so they didn't want to talk about death. I still hear that today. There's so many people out there. But he and his daughter, my cousin, were sitting with the mother. The mother had been very, very ill. And all of a sudden, this gray mist left her body, and she saw it, and then she tapped her father, and he saw it. Both of them saw the same thing. It was leaving, it was like in the solar plex, and so it was a huge, huge mist, and then it just slowly evaporated, and she was leaving. My husband had a similar experience where, and he was a big time skeptic. Oh gosh, you know, my husband, the child psychologist, help us all, you know, it's amazing our kids can walk upright. Well, anyway, he went to visit his father, and he was going to spend the night, and I had put together a care package for him. Well, while he was sitting there, this mist left his father's body, but it was rainbow in color. And so it manifested. And then as he was passing, it left. And he came home and he said, he was very shook up. He was, because he'd never experienced anything like that. So a trip to Arthur Findlay, we had to do that for him. We had to go get him educated as we speak. There was another guy who lives in Australia, and he just had an after-death communication with all of his pets, where all of them showed up at once. Not just a few of them, I mean all of them showed up at once. And he felt very, very, he had no children, and these were his children. Pets are very important. I mean, my witch cat is very, very, she's very important. He's very important. It was just kind of a strange experience for my husband. And so he has come back in a reading my husband had, but I don't quite remember the gist of it. But, you know, I have tons of these stories. I have 3 books on this stuff, and I'm finishing up the 4th. So, and it's in all religions. There were, let me see. I mean, I don't keep tabs on stories, but I don't mind reading them. Okay. Let's see what we got here. Oh, this one. I got to tell you this one. You'll love this one. Okay. So, and this was somebody who contacted me, and she said that her mother, when she had passed, was preparing to pass, she started talking about a party and how there was going to be a party. And she looked at her daughter and said, where are the refreshments? You need to go get the refreshments. And then the aunt was there too, on this side of the plane. And so she started talking too. And so this person's mother and her aunt started arguing about things. They started arguing about this party. And then she passed. But what happened afterwards is very interesting. Mm-hmm. After she passed, she came back. The father had been really, really, the father had had a tragic accident. And within the accident, he had crossed over. And so they never got to say their goodbyes to their father. Well, then she has this experience where she is told by both of her parents from the other world that they're fine, don't worry. And then they gave her a message that involved another relative, that involved an upcoming tragedy that this person might go through. And so they were floored by that, because there were several people there then. And the tragedy actually happened as was presented. I'm tit for tat.
So actually what you're doing, you've anticipated the question I was going to ask, that a lot of people say these experiences are just to do with chemicals in the brain, but how could something precognitive occur if it was a hallucination? That does not compute.
No, it doesn't, because, okay, if somebody comes into my office and they start putting tin foil on my windows, I know that there's probably a deep, deep, deep psychological problem, and that they need medical attention. And so I'll refer them to a medical person. If somebody comes in here and they just talk consistently about one experience they've had over and over and over again, that's very, very different, because there's the flow of language when somebody is not having contact is like everyday language. It feels, it's like you and I having a chat right now. When one has one of these experiences, as I said, it imprints on them. They may have to go through an adjustment period. Psychologically, it can have them getting bowled over. I mean, I have a friend, Dr. Bruce Grayson, who was one of the founders of the near-death experience research movement. He talks about situations like that, which are similar to what I'm describing. And so the thing is that I'm really having a hard time expressing it, because it's like a wow experience. It's like a deep emotional, you know, crying. And then there's this communication that goes back and forth and back and forth.
I've experienced it, I must tell you, and I've told my listeners before, so I'll keep this account of it short. My grandfather, my father's father, Walter Sr. in Liverpool, was dying of stomach cancer. I was probably about 11. And I didn't really understand it, really. It was terribly sad. His bed was brought downstairs because he couldn't get upstairs. And towards the end, he was emaciatedly thin. He was very, very ill. He didn't know, thankfully, how ill he was. But he talked of conversations with people who had passed, and even a child who my father didn't know anything about. This child had died very young, and my father hadn't been born at that point. That child came back. and there was a curtain close to my grandfather. They had sort of shelves that were covered by a curtain that was quite common in Liverpool houses then. And he talked about having a conversation. And as he talked, the story goes, the curtain moved. And, you know, he was quite into all of these things anyway. So was my dad. But it was, you know, I have these dim recollections of everybody talking about the conversations that Walter Sr., my grandfather, had probably a week or so before he died.
That is a wonderful, account. So what you experienced was near death or a premonition. And so he was sharing things with you that he wanted to pass on to you. He didn't want to leave. This was unfinished business for him. And so some people, this is a real common experience. As someone is preparing to pass, they get into this space where all of a sudden they brighten up and they light up and they want to talk and they want to. So like this person who, the Greek woman I was telling you about, they all use their hands. So in this vision, this was a deathbed vision. It was a pre-death experience. It was something that imprinted on my friend's soul. But then something happened with one of her siblings that was incredibly tragic, just really tragic. And so it's a long, long story, so I'm not going to get into the whole thing. But that tragedy actually had happened. And they were trying to help her deal with this and tell all the relatives about this. And so the tragedy was true. The loss was true. And those kind of things, they really bowl me over.
They're the things that you couldn't know about, you know, automatically, just as my father didn't know about the sibling that he'd had who died very young, and they hadn't really talked about this person. My father was surprised, well, more than surprised by that. So I think as we come to the end of this, Carla, we need to sum up what this is like. And I had a sort of vision of it myself. You know, when we're in radio and we are finishing a program, and we are going to go to a show that's being done from the studio next door, we have to bring the sound from that studio into our studio before everything is switched over. So for a little while, when a program is coming to an end, you have to be also taking sound from the studio that's coming on air next. It sounds to me like these deathbed situations are a little bit like that. There is a point at which you are close to death. You might actually be reprieved from it, but the lines are open, and you're literally taking sound from the other studio. In other words, the other side, yeah?
That's exactly right. You got it. And that's it in a nutshell. And there is a sense that this is not a hallucination, that there really is something going on. You know, Charlie showed up and did tell me about the keys hanging in the garage and where to go in the garage to do X, Y, and Z. So it's a feeling that an individual has. I have an after death communication that goes on. I don't like to call it that, but when I was really, really sick, I started seeing 11:11. I saw it on the television. I saw it on my computer, my phone.
I keep seeing it too.
You do, really? Do you know what it means?
Mm-hmm. No, I don't. I have no idea, but I can tell you that it happens all the time. In fact, it happened last night.
Okay. What that means is that your, whatever you want to call them, your guide, your angels, your loved ones are watching over you, and that they're there for you. And that they will always be there for you. And so anytime a crisis is about to happen, I will see those numbers. I will see those numbers right after a crisis happens. They don't come to me in dreams. They come to me on technology. So clocks or sometimes I will see them. I went to a hotel once and I was placed in a 11:11 a room. Just pulled me over. I was like, wow, you guys are really trying to get my attention. But it is. It's kind of a loving experience, but sometimes it can be prepare for messages that are coming. So yes, that's a really interesting subject. I have a friend who sees 444, and that started after his brother passed away. And so that after-death communication for him was something that he treasures, because his brother died in a horrible accident. So, I mean, there was this one time when I had a minister over here, and she said she wanted a reading, and I said, sure. And so we sat down, and I started to realize that this was somebody close to her. And then I moved on, and I got a description head to toe, and she became real uncomfortable. And then as I moved on, she became very emotional at the information I was giving her. And then all of a sudden I felt this incredible, strong, powerful punch in the chest. Like it punched so hard, I couldn't breathe. And that happens sometimes, or an after-death communication can be feeling another person's, where they are at physically when they passed, where they're at now. So anyway, I mean, I had to catch my breath. And so after we finished, she said, my son was killed in an altercation with a gang. He was shot to death.
Oh, Lord.
Oh yeah. And, she was in pieces. But it was like happy pieces. And, she never came back, but there's this feeling of doing service, with humanity, that it isn't me. It's spirit doing this, and it works through, me. And I just have to be open and not let my brain get into it. But if people can have these experiences themselves, if they get a picture of their one who has passed and they look at it before they go to bedtime and have a conversation with the individual in the photo and ask this person to come into their dreams, and they do it over and over and over again, and eventually they get results. And they're absolutely floored. I think everybody has a bit of medium in them. And so there are ways to make contact.
Well, I'll give that a try, and I will report back to you, Carla. We're out of time here. Thank you for this. I mean, this has been a podcast. When you do this on, you know, the big radio shows in the United States, what kind of response do you get? Do you get some people saying, I've been through this myself, and you get some people saying, I think this is all hooey? What sort of, you know, reaction do you get?
Mostly, I don't get a lot of, oh, this is hooey. I get some, I will get a little skepticism. I don't remember all the time what it is that I'm saying or I'm experiencing. And so they may hear something from me like, oh, this is a strand of pearls, but something that I wouldn't have brought up, but something that they know about, how many children they have, that kind of like, it floors them. And they still may be skeptical, and skepticism is not a bad thing. I receive a lot of mail and email, positively, it's positive. Mm-hmm. Many of them want information about what they experienced, and so I direct them towards books and radio shows and things like that.
That's excellent. You know, I personally think, you know, people need to open their minds up, because, you know, we don't know in the three-dimensional world that we inhabit. We don't know everything. And,
no,
you know,
we don't.
And most of us fear death and hope that there's going to be something else and that the process is not that bad. So anything that gives us insight into that, I personally think has value. And that's why, you know, I've listened to what you said. I've enjoyed it.
Well, thank you so much for giving me the opportunity.
If anybody wants to check out, I'm sure they will, where your work is. I know that you have a website. You want to give the address?
The website is www.carlaclark, CarlaWillsBrandon.com. So that it would Carla with a C. It's Carla with a C, A R L A, Wills with a W, W I L L S, and then Brandon, like bird, B R A N D O N.com.
Carla, thank you for giving me your time. And, you know, we've coped with the sound from London coming back through your speaker very well, I think. And please, you know, more strength to you. Take care.
Thank you so much, Howard.
Like I say, a very different kind of conversation. Carla Wills Brandon. And I have to explain to you that Carla is one of the many, many people in this world of ours who've had COVID. So she's, you know, still feeling the after effects of that. She's been through an awful lot in her life. What an interesting guest, though. What interesting stories, don't you think? Your thoughts are very welcome. Go to the website, theunexplained.tv. You can follow the link and send me an email from there. Carla Wills Brandon is the woman's name. Thank you very much for being part of this. More great guests in the pipeline here at The Unexplained. So until next we meet, my name is Howard Hughes. This has been The Unexplained Online. And please, whatever you do, stay safe, stay calm, and above everything else, please stay in touch. Thank you very much. Take care. Bye-bye.